Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just, for me, has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better, and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? I got an interesting email this week. He says, thank you for taking my email in question. My girlfriend and I listen to you on the radio, and she respects your opinion as I do. So here's the question. I've been separated for 9 months.
And I don't know what to do because I want other women and I don't know how to stop that. Well, when you have chronic infidelity and or you don't feel like what you have in your relationship is enough, and maybe you have difficulty talking about it, or maybe it's all one-sided, then you more than likely have a sexual addiction, because sexual addiction occurs in lots of different ways. And I'm here to tell you that there is no doubt that today's world is so fast-paced and we are so into immediate gratification that sex is no longer treasured and respected. It is something to conquer, almost as if it's a conquest. Maybe that's anonymous sex. Maybe you don't even let people know who you are. Or maybe that's multiple affairs. Maybe it's just cyber sex, and I say just because it's not anything that you actually participate in that's one-on-one, but you watch. It's a voyeuristic tendency, and it's pornography. If you have those issues, then this is the right place for you to be. Hi, I am Carol the Coach, and I'm here to talk with you about sex help with Carol the Coach. This is the only show on the internet that has to do with sexual addiction, and I'm so honored, one, to disseminate information so that you will find out more about this disorder, and two, to bring on experts who actually have way more knowledge than I do, and they can share either research that they've studied or books that they've written or people that they've worked with or treatment centers that they've started. I am happy to be here, and, you know, Mondays are always an interesting day for me because I am up at the crack of dawn. I'm up at 5, and I work on self-care for me. So I get up. I have a protein-based breakfast. I do some reading. I get on the internet and do some emailing. I actually meditate for a little bit. And I identify what is it that I want to create with my own mind. And then I exercise every single day. I never, ever, ever miss. Okay, so that's at 5 a.m. in the morning. And by 8 o'clock, I'm at work. And I start at 8. And on Mondays, I actually end I end at about 7 o'clock because at 5 o'clock I have a sexual addictions group with 9 men. And I typically go till 6:30, 6:45, and then I have to put the office back together, do the billing, and take off. So as if that wasn't a long enough day, then here I am with you at 9 o'clock on Monday evening. That's right. This show can be accessed every Monday night from 9 to 10 Eastern Standard Time on www.blogtalkradio.com/Carol, Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And I feel very honored to be doing this because I know that, you know, this is a relatively new area to be discussing via the media. And anybody who calls in, and I would encourage you to call in, the number is 1-646-595-3284. That is our guest call-in number. Again, if you have a pen or you've got your phone there, put me in, put Carol the Coach Show, and it's 646-595-3284. And I would encourage you to call in and ask your questions now. I get lots of emails during the week from all over the world about people who are having a lot of difficulties with their mates, with their kids. I mean, this is an affliction, a disorder, a disease that affects everybody. And so it's nothing for you to be ashamed of, and obviously it can be very anonymous. And you can call in and ask the very questions that you might need. Now, right now, in my men's group, I'm dealing with two different men who are experiencing different issues. I've got one man who he and his wife are going to be facing a full disclosure. They're going to Milton Magnus's program. I'm begging Milt to get on this call so that we can talk about what hope, freedom, and recovery is all about in terms of disclosure. And, you know, Milt is a person that really believes that a full disclosure is absolutely necessary and that polygraph tests are necessary before, during, and after the disclosure. One, to help an addict become accountable, and two, to make the partner or to help the partner feel like there's progress being made, that they are not being deluded or deceived. And there's a part of me that really believes in that. I mean, I absolutely believe in disclosure. I think there's all sorts of ways to do that. Because there are two D words. One is discovery, and unfortunately, that is when a partner or a loved one finds out that there is a problem. And then there is disclosure, and that is when the partner, the sex addict, decides to become 100% clean and share everything that they can. Now, we tell them don't necessarily describe the gory details, but give timelines, give places, talk about what happened, and to the best of your ability, talk about why. And so that's one of my men in my group. He's getting ready to do that with his wife, and they actually are flying out from Indianapolis to Arizona to get that done. The other person that's dealing with the disclosure is I have a client who has a wife. And she saw the book that Milt Magnus wrote that my one men's group person had given to the other one. And she started to read it, and she's insisting now that her husband do the same thing. Now, he's not so sure about the validity of polygraph tests. And so he does not want to jeopardize his relationship by taking one if there's any chance that it can be, if it can be untrue. And I've assured him that with the people that I've worked with, that ultimately I've never seen a polygraph test come back and not be accurate. But I too know that there's always room for problems. And, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, now is this man hiding something and he doesn't want to get discovered? And so he doesn't want to do the polygraph test. Or is he just absolutely scared to death and he doesn't want to take a risk of alienating his wife, whom he's lived with for over 50 years? And, you know, I can't read minds, so I don't know what's going on. And I just really, really, really encourage them to continue having a dialogue. And tonight I'm going to be giving you a little bit of fact about, you know, what happens when there's relapse and what do you do about disclosure. And, you know, this is an area that has not been studied or researched to the degree that we would like it to be. But that's why we always encourage you to go to a website, www.sexhelp.com, and get on that website and take their tests that are free just so we can compile more information. Be 100% honest. If you're the partner, there's a test for you. If you're the addict, there's a test for you. And, you know, we're only going to get better in this field if we can get accurate information from the people that we're working with. And let's face it, this, like any other addiction, deals with lies and deceit and a lot of deception. And so, you know, at least anonymously, if you can answer the test, you'll be helping us to get accurate information so that we can really do a better job of working with people that we care about, that we want to get healthy, we want to get past this affliction. Again, if you're listening to the show live, and I know a lot of you listen to it, you download it later and you listen to it at your convenience, and I love that. That's what I do with my podcast. So, you know, I never take offense that all I want you to do is listen. But if you would call me, my number is 646-595-3284. The lines are absolutely open. And, you know, we have oftentimes, when working with people, relapse is so very common. And, you know, I've got a guy right now who has relapsed, and he's not coming to therapy. He's not doing group. He's laying low. He's in a treatment center, and he's staying really, really quiet. And I think he's decreasing his stimulation. He wants to get centered and focused. And I appreciate that for the time that's needed to get yourself back on track. But this is a man who, boy, he's amazing. He looks at things analytically and really comes up with action plans. You know, you might say, well, if he's so amazing, then why did he relapse? Well, I got to tell you, relapse occurs. It occurs quite regularly. In a research study, people reported that, you know, there was at least one relapse in the first 2 to 5 years, and that was very common. Now, my experience is it's higher than that. You know, I'm not putting anybody down because this is so difficult. Whenever you're dealing with a process addiction, and that's what this is considered, this is when, you know, people have to be in relationships, and they have to deal with people that they love. And, you know, there was a study done by Deb Corley and Jennifer Schneider, and their participants were men and women. 89.5% were male, and 86% of those were heterosexual, and 82% of those were in committed relationships, and 68% of them were college grads, and 72% had past abuse. And their partners The mean age was 44 years old, and 95% were female and heterosexual, and 67% were college grads, and 58% were survivors of abuse. And initially, 33% of our partners had self-doubt and hopelessness, and they didn't know, they weren't sure what they should divulge. But they ended up meeting with therapists that advised them to be honest, be general, no gory details, and to wait until a partner was not as angry so that they could really receive the information. And when you disclose information and you've had really high risk acting out, believe it or not, disclosure represents hope and an end to a secret life. And that is ever so important in dealing with anybody who wants to change their life and develop intimacy in a relationship. Now, I realize that disclosure is really a scary thing because you're so afraid. Well, what happens if my partner leaves? What happens if I traumatize my partner? But the good news is that in most cases, the partners didn't leave. Maybe only in a quarter of the cases did the partner leave. So, you know, if a partner felt so betrayed that they could not trust the addict, then if you really love somebody, you want them to feel happy. You want them to really, you want them to feel that sense of safety and trust again. And so one of the things that we do in counseling is that we talk about how important it really is for you to do the next right thing, even if it's hard, it's difficult, you're taking risks. And we really don't believe that you should ever disclose information, ever, without having somebody who understands the disclosure process with you. The reason being is because everybody deserves support. And when, if you were just to tell your spouse everything, you would be jeopardizing her mental health. And, you know, she needs to have support so that she knows that she can absolutely get some relief. Maybe she can talk with a therapist and understand this process. And so never, ever, ever disclose without getting with a therapist who knows about disclosure. I'm going to be taking a call right now. And I want to welcome you to Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And your name is?
Hello.
Hello. Hi, this is Carol the Coach. What can I do for you today?
Hi, my name's Esther.
Esther, nice to hear from you, Esther. Tell me, what are some of the questions you might have about sexual addiction, your partner, and, of course, yourself?
Well, I have trouble processing it. Like, I get really upset and emotional about it. so I just need help, like, with how to deal with it. And because I take it very personal.
Well, understandably, Esther. I mean, obviously, this is your life. So tell me, how long have you been married?
13 years.
Okay, and at what point did you first find out that your husband had a sexual addiction?
Well, it was like, maybe a year or two into the marriage, but I discovered something, but I'm not sure if he would technically be considered a sex addict. I don't know what the definition of it is.
Oh, okay. Well, tell me what you discovered. Maybe he isn't a sex addict. Maybe he just made a mistake or was unfaithful or had a problem that was not compulsive. So what happened? What did you find out?
Well, one day, like after he came from work, I discovered a Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition magazine. And I just really didn't react very well to that, kind of flipped out. So that was the first thing, and we kind of talked about it, but I don't think, because of the way I reacted, I think I shut him down. And,
was he hiding the Sports Illustrated magazine, or was it right there on the coffee table?
Oh, no, it was in his briefcase.
Okay. So the magazine was in the briefcase, and that's how you discovered it.
Mm-hmm.
And you freaked out, which, of course, freaked him out, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and so then how did you end up working it out?
Well, with that, it's been such a number of years ago. It's been like over 10 years ago. So I don't really remember. There was some sort of where we got over it, where we stopped talking about it. But then it came up again because I was, I was always interested in modeling, and I had a profile on a modeling site. And then one night I caught him looking at the other women on the profile. So.
Okay, so when you say you caught him, you walked into a room he was in, and he was actually on your site looking at other women.
Yeah, we were sleeping, or I was sleeping, and for some reason I noticed he wasn't there, and so it was like late at night.
Yeah, you know, a lot of women do that. They wake up, their husbands are not in bed, and it's almost like they have this gut feeling that something might be wrong, and so they kind of check that out, and there their husband is either looking at pornography or looking at YouTube videos or looking at modeling sites. So he was actually on your modeling site.
Well, at that point it was a free site where anybody who was in modeling could just post up their pictures and so I don't know. My site was right next to that one model. I can't remember what her name is, but anyway.
Well, that's okay. So then did you freak out again?
I was upset, but I don't remember what I did at that point. But the next day or something, I emailed our pastor explained to him this, to the situation, because I didn't know what this was. I just wasn't really educated about men, really. So that upset him when I emailed the pastor and discussed that with him.
Yeah, it's kind of like, A, you exposed him to somebody in the public realm, and he didn't want to be embarrassed. And then probably he was probably saying, boy, she's overreacting, and she's making this look way worse than it really is. Does that sound about right? Okay. So then did the pastor meet with the two of you?
Yeah, we met together.
Okay.
But
how'd
I don't
that go?
It went okay. I just felt like I don't remember getting help for that. I don't know if he referred him for any help and he just didn't follow up. But I there wasn't anything really for me. I didn't get any kind of counseling, but I just felt, I was really hurt, and I just didn't feel very heard by the pastor. So.
Well, and that can happen. There's no doubt about it. I mean, not everybody knows how to deal with this. And to be honest, because I work with a lot of pastors, a lot of pastors do this kind of behavior too. So it can be a scary thing because they think, oh my gosh, she's really freaking out about her husband, and I do the same thing. So who knows? I'm certainly not implicating your pastor, but you don't remember getting any referral to how do you get help and how do you work through this?
Mm-mm, no, and then it's like, then fast forward years later, you know, there's been a number other incidents, and then I just, it's just like then more and more of the truth trickles out. And, you know, I was talking to my spouse just a while ago, and then I got another revelation of something else, and I'm like, oh. Because I'm trying, you know, I don't know. I just wanted to know, like, the whole truth, and I just get a lot of resistance to that.
Well, and I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show, but so oftentimes partners, you know, your spouse does not want to traumatize you any further, so they don't want to go into their behavior because they know it's not going to make you happy. And, you know, they may be in denial. They may think, well, what I'm doing is not really cheating. I mean, I'm just looking at videos, or I'm just looking at websites, or I'm just looking at pictures. That's not going to hurt anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they think. And so they definitely don't want to tell you that, especially if you have a tendency to freak out, because they really don't want to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
So what were some of the other things that happened in the last few years?
Like how many years? Just like within the past few years, couple years, or?
Well, after you met with the pastor, you said that a few other things had happened that made you upset. So what were some of the other things?
Well, the ones that I know about, apparently it's been happening like every year. So,
okay.
You know, I don't know how often because he's not being very, you know, because he doesn't want to hurt me. There was a couple incidents in 2004, like with the internet and websites and, you know, websites and YouTube. And then, because I've had a number of these events, and, like, I'll find out, and then I kind of freak out. And then, you know, then I calm down, and then it's like this pattern. It keeps on repeating. And then so this last time, because this past summer I actually took the kids and left because something popped up on his iPad screen. And so that was just, you know, we were there together and it popped up in front of me and, you know, it was just bad. But so
well,
that was
I mean, that's always traumatic when, and I always say it's kind of a godsend. Even though it hurts, you want things to pop up so that you're not in denial with him and you can see. So was it something pornographic or was it some more magazines like Sports Illustrated information or what popped up?
It was as far as, I didn't look at it very long because it was like lingerie and stuff. You know, I was just kind of trying to close it because he was right next to me and I just didn't want to look at him, you know, because I guess it kind of felt like that. But then I was like, no, this is wrong. And then I was like, something's wrong here. And then it finally clicked. I'm like, you know, did you do this? And he's like, yeah, because apparently with your iPad, if whatever, like you were looking at, if you close it at a certain point, it takes a screenshot of what you were looking at. I don't fully understand that. But that's what happened. It took a screenshot of the last thing he was looking at, and it put it in the streaming.
So you definitely know that he has a problem looking at sexual models in lingerie and clothes. Have you ever seen anything that you would consider hard porn?
I'm not really sure because a lot of times I think maybe not, but, you know, from what I saw, no, but then, you know, he's not going to tell me.
Well, I know that. But, you know, there's two kinds of voyeuristic materials. One is soft porn, and that's like Victoria's Secret and Sports Illustrated and lingerie and modeling, and that's considered soft porn in that, you know, that creates fantasies in a man, but it is not hard porn. And hard porn, of course, is total nudity and sexual acts. And so I just was trying to determine, because if he has a sexual addiction, and I'm not saying that he does by any means, but if he does, this stuff will get worse and worse and worse. And so that's why I wondered, had you seen anything that you felt was absolutely pornographic? And it sounds like, no, you haven't, but your fear is that you don't want it to get to that degree. And he's exhibiting behaviors because he's hiding things from you, and he's kind of lying about them, and he's doing them when he hopes you won't find out, whether that's because it's not when you're at home, maybe you're shopping, or do you work outside of the home?
No.
Okay. And maybe he's doing it at work. Did you know that the number one time that men look at pornographic materials is at work from 9 to 5? So it's not even in the home, it's outside. It's actually at their work. And so, you know, I don't want to make you nervous about him, but already it seems like he's unable to stop a behavior that's upsetting to you. You know, whether it's a big deal or not in his own mind, he can't stop, and then you freak out. My goodness, I mean, last year you took the kids and you left. Now, what prompted that? What prompted you saying, okay, I've had it, I'm taking the kids, and I'm leaving?
Well, I don't know. I felt it was a really good choice because I was distancing myself from him physically because, you know, I was really upset. And in the past, I got really angry and I've actually hit him over this issue, which I'm not proud of.
No, you never want to do that.
Yeah.
That's how mad you were.
Oh, yeah. I've been really mad. And, you know, I'm kind of I've grown a lot from therapy. I've always been kind of like stuffing my feelings. And so that kind of adds to it. So I was really, I was also afraid of how I'd react towards him. But when I was with him, I thought I did really good because I was calm at that time that evening. And I know he was really scared because he thought I was going to freak out. He didn't know what I was going to do. And so the next morning, you know, I was talking to a bunch of people and friends and stuff, and that's when I decided to leave. And it was, we left, we were away for a couple weeks.
Okay, and where'd you go?
I went to my mom's house.
I would almost guess you went to your mom's house, yes. Okay, and so what you really did was you set a boundary, and you said, I'm not going to, I bet you did this on two different levels. One is you said, I'm not going to keep putting up with this. And then the second thing is when you got that mad that you hit him, you knew that your behavior was out of control.
Yeah.
Because the last thing you want to do is be that rageful that you hit your husband. I mean, that is out of control behavior too. So now we got two people that have out of control behavior, right?
Yeah.
So what did you find that day that just threw you into that tailspin, threw you into that rage?
On what occasion? When I hit him?
Yeah, when you hit him.
That was like in 2004, and, you know, I don't really remember. There was a bunch of sites, and my memory is just not good. But, you know, there were just different sites and the YouTube thing, and you know, I just can't remember. There might have been just naked pictures, but I really don't remember, like, sexual acts. But, yeah, I was just a lot more insecure and not able to deal with my feelings and emotions back then. I've made a lot more progress in that area.
So you have your own therapist right now. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, because since after when I came back from when I left, we're back in marriage counseling. So we go to joint marriage counseling, and then we both have private therapy sessions. So I have a therapist. And then I'm just looking for another, like, group, a support group or something. I just really realize I need all the help I can get because it's just, I know it's his issue, but my issue is how his issue affects me and
right.
how I deal with it. So,
well, absolutely. And that is so smart of you to know that you need a support group or maybe a woman's group or something. Now, has anybody ever said to you, your husband has a sexual addiction?
Yeah, this one therapist that we went to thought that. But
okay.
As far as taking that official test, you know,
uh-huh.
he's never taken that, I don't know what it's called, that test.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there is an official test. It costs anywhere from $100 to $150, and it's called the Sexual Dependency Inventory Test, and it's really about 36 pages worth of information for him and about 40 for your counselor. But was your counselor, was she versed or he versed in sexual addictions?
Well, the one that I said that he was, I don't remember what his expertise were, but he was a former alcoholic, so I don't know if that would make any difference. He was an addict himself.
Yeah, you know what? That in some ways that does, because addiction is very much alike, whether it's drug, alcohol, sex, work, gambling, overeating, spending, whatever. But it doesn't sound like you went to anybody who was certified in sexual addictions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can I ask you, what city do you live in?
I can't tell you that.
That is absolutely fair. Do you have a pen and paper there?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What I want you to do is go to www.sexhelp.com.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get on that site, look up Find a Therapist. Because
mm-hmm.
the therapist they will recommend will have expertise in this area.
Okay.
Now, then when it says find a therapist, you just put in the state and then you put in the city. And
okay.
So you'll be able to find within a 200-mile radius, is there anybody that's trained in your area? For
okay.
instance, I'm in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I'm
mm-hmm.
assuming you're not in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the only therapist, and Indianapolis is a pretty big city, but I'm the only therapist in the Indianapolis area that has this kind of formalized training. And I have to tell you, Esther, that on occasion, probably one out of every 10 couples that come in to see me, I tell them, no, your husband does not have a sexual addiction. You know, he's going down the wrong road. He's pursuing things that are making you uncomfortable in the relationship. So when that happens, we as partners need to stop behaviors that will affect our partner negatively. So I may say this is behavior that has to stop because it's problematic in the relationship. But no, he does not have a sexual addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so it's, you know, just because he's looking at models or looking at lingerie, that doesn't mean he has a sexual addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Because sexual addiction is on a continuum. And he may be just at the start of this, which means that it's problematic behavior, but it is not an addiction.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to get you all worried and make you think that, oh, my gosh, your husband has a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
However, you really do need to at least be able to identify where he is on that continuum. Now, if you go to that website that I told you about, www.sexhelp.com, There is a test for him to take that's free, and there is a test for you to take that's free. And it will also help to say, okay, do you have a problem? And if so, what is the problem? And, of course, without seeing you, nobody can absolutely know, but they can kind of give you some idea of what you need to work on and where you need to go. And that's not my website, although I do have a website, and that's called Sex Help with Carol the Coach. This website is run by a man by the name of Patrick Carnes. Have you ever heard of him?
Is he an author?
He's an author, and he's a sex addict, and he helped to write Sex Addicts Anonymous, which is like the 12-step big book for people that have sexual problems. So, you know, he is a man that he's a psychologist. He does counseling. He's run treatment centers. He actually worked with Tiger Woods.
Wow.
So when Tiger wanted to go to somebody, he went to the best. And it is his organization that runs that website. And I just highly recommend it because it's based on research. It's not based on, hey, we want your money or we want you to see it our way. So it's a very legitimate website. So that's where I would send you first and foremost.
Okay.
Now, has your husband ever cheated on you? And I mean physically cheated on you.
No.
Okay, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And how many kids do you have?
I have three kids. One is from a previous marriage, and then I have two children with my current husband.
Okay. And how old is your oldest?
She's 20.
Okay. So do you think that any of the kids have ever seen anything inappropriate on Dad's laptop or on his iPad or on his phone?
No.
Okay, so they've not come to you and said, Mom,
mm-mm,
Dad had weird pictures on his phone or whatever.
Yeah, no.
That's great. Because, you know, it's bad enough when it affects your self-esteem. But
yeah,
it's twice as bad when you think that it might be corrupting the kids or teaching them difficult lessons that they don't need to learn. So I applaud the whole family that that's not the case there.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, how do you feel about yourself? Because, you know, obviously you've been traumatized. And, you know, it's almost like I can sense that you have a lot of anxiety and you're afraid he's going to get one over on you, or you're afraid that you're going to be in the dark and you won't see all the stuff that might be going on.
Yeah, well, from the beginning, well, even before we were married, you know, I've always had, like, self-esteem issues. I just turned 40 this year.
And that's a hard age, isn't it? Because
now
you're just kind of, you're doing the tipping factor, and now you're much more mature than you've ever been before.
Yeah, in some ways, I've really improved in my self-esteem, but then, like with this issue, sometimes I regress because it just hits me really hard, and I, you know, on one hand, I know it's not about me, but yet then I take it personally, and I just, it's very confusing, and...
Well, and this is what I want to tell you, Esther. I don't want you to take it personally. Because even if your husband has this compulsion, this isn't because he doesn't love you, and it's not because he doesn't think you're good enough. It's because he's trained his brain to want to look for this kind of stuff. And I know that as a woman, it's really hard to believe that we're good enough exactly as we are, especially if you've bared three kids now. Now, just get real live and personal with me on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being, Carol, I am a very attractive woman, and 0 being, I am as ugly as they come. What number would you give yourself?
What I think about myself? Or
not what he thinks, but what you think.
I think I'm like a 6.
Okay. And when did you feel like you were a 7 or an 8?
Well, a couple years ago when I was really working out and working on my body and, you know, I don't know. I want to look good, but I go to these extremes and I was, you know, I put a lot of work into it, but then it got to where it was consuming me, you
know. So it became obsessive.
Yeah, you know, I was really proud, but, you know, I was proud of all the effort I put, but, you know, then I was just like, I would, you know, really be restricting my diet, and then, you know, I'd have a binge day, and I'd have a day where I would, you know, family movie night where I'd eat a bunch of junk food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you were human, weren't you, Esther?
Yeah.
Well, here's what I want to say. Do you do any kind of working out now, whether it be walking, running, weight training, Pilates, yoga?
Yeah, I've gotten, because, like, I got out of it, and, like, when I left, I was kind of, before that I was working out, and then I left when I moved in with my mom, and so I got out of it, and since I moved back, I was trying to get back into it, like, slowly, because I have to, you know, start slowly and work up to the level I was at before, because I kind of regressed, you know.
Sure.
And so I've been just, like, doing elliptical and weight lifting.
Okay.
But
well,
I don't want to get crazy about it.
No, you definitely don't want to get crazy, but you really need to take a good hard look at yourself, and separate from your husband, you have to say, you know, what would make me feel better about myself? Now, I heard you say it would make you feel better if your body looked better.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you don't want to become compulsive and you don't want to become obsessive. So what do you think would be a normal amount of time to devote towards improving your health and your fitness but not going overboard?
Well, I was shooting for like 5 days a week, at least a half an hour a day.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my minimum.
Okay, and are you doing that now?
I was last week. I didn't do it today.
Okay. And
yeah.
So can I ask you, what gets in your way? I think that's a great goal, 5 days a week, a half hour. That's not excessive, but it's very healthy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, today I was just making excuses not to do it today. It's just because, I don't know, like when I set my mind to it, I will, you know, when I set my mind to do something, I really, unfortunately, hyper-focus on that. So I can do it. I'm capable of doing it, but I guess I'm a little bit afraid. I'm a little afraid of getting back into the, you know, being too compulsive in that area.
Yeah, I don't blame you, but what I would encourage you to do is chart it. It's kind of like what I recommend for men that are trying to stop behaviors that are upsetting to their wives. You know, even if they don't think that their problem has gone overboard, you know, we talk about the fact that clearly you want to have a healthy relationship with each other. And so there are times that you have to give and take to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want you not to be the best that you can be, because that, you know, you may go overboard with that, but I want you to feel good about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would love for you to find something fitness-wise that actually works out your anxiety. I'd like for you to start saying positive things to yourself. And I want to send you to my website. It's not my sexual addiction website. It's my normal website, and it's called carolthecoach.com. And on that website, there are over 500 blogs of things you can do to feel better about yourself, and it's really geared towards women, because I really think women are way too hard on themselves and typically put themselves on the back burner and don't take good enough care of themselves. So I would highly recommend you go to that website and take a look at that. Mm-hmm. The other thing is you said you want a support group. And when you said a support group, are you talking about a sexual addiction support group for partners, or are you talking about like a woman's empowerment group or something where you can be yourself, talk about your issues, and get love and support from other women?
I was talking about help with women who've been, you know, wives of sexual addicts or, you know, feel betrayed. I'd go up and down in my emotions, and I don't know if there's a process you go to where you are resolved about the issue, where you have, like, closure on the issue. I don't know.
Well, the better you feel about yourself, the more detached you become, which is that you say, you know what? I am going to live a normal and happy life, and I'm a believer that your husband needs to be appreciated, and mm-hmm. what you appreciates. So the more you love him for him, and the better you feel about the things that he is doing for you, the healthier your relationship will be.
Mm-hmm.
However, at the same time, if you know, his iPad comes up and it shows that he's on those sites, or if you get up in the middle of the night and he's looking at any kind of undesirable behavior, you may have to have a boundary. And that boundary may be, you know, I want us to go to a certified sexual addictions therapist. That boundary may be, I want us to go to Recovering Couples Anonymous so that
mm-hmm.
we go and find out how we both can be happy and you can stop these behaviors. Because I don't know, is he the kind of guy that says, okay, I'll cut this out, I promise, I think you're making a big deal over nothing, but I'll stop, and then he doesn't stop? Or does he say, oh, you're crazy, you're just blowing things out of proportion?
Well, yeah, in the past, it just seemed like we dealt with it by ourselves more, but it kept on reoccurring, so.
Okay, so does he think that you're blowing things out of proportion?
I think now he's beginning to see how it affects me. Because he's, you know, he's done a lot. I guess I really need to give him more credit than I have.
Okay.
So, because he's, you know, we're doing the counseling, and he has some accountability partners. But like you said,
through the church.
Yeah, they're mainly men. They're not experts in this area, but at least they know the struggle. They share like similar struggles, and they can he can talk to them if he feels like he's having issues.
And does your church offer something called Celebrate Recovery?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. We have a couple churches in our area that do. I've known about it. I haven't gone there. I talked to one of the ladies. I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit scared. I'm a little bit shy in groups. I'm not scared about talking about the issue, but that's like how my personality is. It takes me a little while to feel comfortable in groups of people, in support groups.
Well, I totally get that. Although Celebrate Recovery is a great group for men or women that want to stop behaviors. And, you know, one of the things I definitely hear from you, I mean, I was so pleased just a second ago to hear that you want to give him credit where credit is due, that he is working on this stuff, that
mm-hmm.
he does love you, that he
mm-hmm.
doesn't want to see you miserable,
mm-hmm.
and he's doing at least some of the things that you feel like he needs to do to get healthy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would encourage you to read a book called, and this book is about sexual addiction, so when you read it, you may go, oh my gosh, that's not me. My husband doesn't do those things. And then you can relax a little bit. It's called Mending a Shattered Heart by Stephanie Carnes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Bible on a book that offers partners guidance and wisdom. Now, it's about sexual addiction, so if you read that book and you can see that no, you've never seen him with porn, and no, he hasn't been unfaithful, and no, you know, he doesn't try to get out of family things so that he can look at stuff, and no, he doesn't spend money. I mean, that may actually make you feel better. You may say, well, I still don't like what he's doing, but it may be not as bad as I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But again, ultimately, and I'm a marital counselor first, and what I believe is if he's exhibiting behavior that's upsetting to you, he really needs to stop that behavior. And if he wants to stop, but he can't, even if it's not pornographic, then he really needs to get some help from a specialist because it's interfering in your relationship. It's interfering in your intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they say sexual addiction is an intimacy disorder. Now, do you feel like the two of you can be close?
Emotionally?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we've struggled with that for a large portion of our marriage because I would always be, I don't know, I just had a feeling that something wasn't right and I just couldn't put my finger on it.
Okay. Well, I'm so glad you're in counseling because how long have you been with this counselor that you're with?
Well, we've been to the same counselors off and on for a number of years, so we're back in with the counselors and since I think it was like January.
Okay. And do you think it's been helpful?
Yeah, I think right now it's been the most helpful because I think he's starting to really sink in about how much his behavior hurts me.
Yeah, exactly.
But I really want him to want to change for himself, though, not just for me.
And I get that, and that's certainly the best way to do it, but sometimes people have to change for the other person.
Uh-huh.
Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, how jealous do you get? 10 is, oh, Carol, I get extremely jealous, and 1 is not so much.
Of the pornography or the women?
Well, of anything, whether that's commercials, whether that's Victoria's Secret commercials, magazines, models, websites, friends, neighbors, church friends.
Well, in the past it was more, and then recently it kind of leveled out. And
mm-hmm.
But when I knew that the issue was still there, then that kind of spiked my jealousy up, you know, really
yeah.
high.
Uh huh.
To like the
10. I get that. Well, and that because again, you've got to have an accountability partner too that helps to remind you when maybe you're being excessive versus, you know. If you're feeling like your husband doesn't desire you, then you've got to figure out what you can do not to be sexier. I'm not talking that. But what you can do to reignite that relationship. And that might look like appreciating him a little bit more or giving him a back rub. Or you probably have in your church the 5 love languages, right? Have
mm-hmm.
you ever heard of that program
mm-hmm.
where you show your love through giving gifts or telling him sweet things or quality time or doing things for him or physical touch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you got to decide what is his love language and then try to give those things to him too.
Okay.
So Esther, here's what I want you to do. I want you to keep working on yourself, not for him, but so that you feel better about yourself. And I want you to email me and let me know how you're doing in a few months. Keep
okay.
listening to the show. Get on www.sexhelp.com and take the test. And keep me posted, okay? Because you're doing all the right things. You just have to keep at it, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. I think you've helped a lot of people, Esther.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Have a great night. All right, well, Esther was very brave, and she certainly is a good role model for wanting to do the right thing with her husband.
this is a show where you can get your questions answered. So as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself, and we'll see you next week for Sex Help with Carol the Coach.